Are we on?
I think we're on.
I think we're on. Great.
I think so.
Hi. How are we all? Welcome. Thanks for coming. My name's Robert, and this is...
I'm Maxine. Nice to meet you all.
And we're going to talk about porn for a whole hour. Yeah.
I've got a bit of a show and tell going on.
Exactly. Yeah, so you can start off with a little bit of a warning. There is going to be some porn in this. So those who came not expecting that, you're at the wrong talk. And those who came expecting porn, we wouldn't want to disappoint you, so here it comes. So getting to be very informal, we're going to talk quite a bit, but also you get any questions or comments or any thoughts, flying with them. Just to give you a little bit of background on us, I'm a seeker, maker, director, raker, performer. And about a year and a half ago, I started doing work around disability and porn. I sort of started with a question of what is it as a disabled person could Google disabled porn? Like, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you do that? So I did a number of little bits of work around disability and porn, and this could give us a bit of a reflection back on a lot of that. Where's Maxine?
Yeah, nice to meet you, Maxine. I studied social sciences, so sociology and psychology, and through my final year project became more interested in sex and disability as a topic. And that's how I met Robert as well. So over the past 2 years now, we've collaborated on a few projects, one which was more academic, more of a dissertation, and then Robert's project, which was more of an art installation and really kind of in your face, making people choose, making people feel uncomfortable. Yeah. We've worked together now, and I'd consider us good friends, and we've got a lot to say on the subject, so it's just about condensing it down now.
We've spent a lot of time meeting in coffee shops talking about disabled porn, which is fine when there's a lot of background noise. When the background noise goes quiet, it can get a little bit awkward, but today, we haven't got that problem.
No, we can say as many words as well.
Fantastic. So we're just going to go through some overall themes and talk a little bit about what we've spoken about, and then we'll see where things go from there. So, first question was, we spoke a lot about the sort of current narrative about porn and about what it is and what it isn't, and how disability feeds into that.
Mm-hmm. And I think as well, before we talk about even the current narrative surrounding porn and disability, I mean, that's even one step too far ahead for most people, because I guess some people can't get their heads around the fact of sex and disability and that it really features in a disabled person's life. So I think there's a current narrative of a lot about asexualization, infantilization, and really where that comes from as well. So before we even start talking about porn, I guess we've got to talk about sex and disability too.
Completely. And I guess that's why I picked porn as a subject, is because I like to take the subject that I want to talk about and then go beyond it. So porn felt like the thing that if we can deal with that, then we can also deal with this, possibly, maybe.
Exactly. And I think as well, obviously in preparation for this, just as it's my interest, I have been chatting to my friends and just different people about disabled pornography. And there's been a lot of different reactions as well. Perhaps one of the most interesting ones was one of my friends said, oh, but I don't really watch disabled porn because I'm not disabled. And that was kind of what we were talking about before, and how that leads on from things. And I guess, you know, lesbian porn isn't exclusively made for lesbian women. Neither is Asian porn, and actually a lot of that is fed mostly from people who have no perspective of those realities.
Because the obvious conclusion of that idea is that what is bestiality porn made for? Is it made for cackles? Probably not. So I guess the sort of overall conclusion was there's no single narrative around disability and porn. There's just a lot of contradictory narratives that are all going on. And throughout today we can talk about some of them coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think as well, even when I've been chatting to different people about disabled pornography, even being aware that it exists and it's out there, because it's not often on what I'd consider, you know, your mainstream porn sites. It's not offered as an option, really. So even knowing that it exists, for some people, they're not aware of that.
Yeah, completely. The great gift that went around for a while was this one. Can we get out of sense? It's a guy at a hotel reception saying, I'd like the program of room to be disabled, and the receptionist saying, we've only got regular porn, you sick bastard. So that idea that, yeah, this is what disabled porn means to a lot of people. It's something over there, something other than what we talk about. The great quote that we keep going back to is, equality's all good and well, but, you know, would you fuck a cripple? Seems to be in a lot of my work, that seems to be what I come back to is, and not that sex is everything, but it's something. It's something that we've all got in common and that we all share. So that always...
Yeah, and I think from speaking to people in the projects I've done before as well, that's really what people can come back to as well, that sexual equality is perhaps even more important than workplace equality or anything else, because it's so intimate, isn't it? And if you can connect with someone on an intimate level, perhaps that's the most important and shows your perspective on things.
Yeah.
Fab.
Okay. What does disabled porn offer society? Sounds like a nice big, you know, ethereal question.
Well, I think you've got to talk about, obviously, society on a wider scale, and I think the more that something is out there, the more it's almost normalised too. And I think you've spoke about before, as a disabled person, having to almost claim a sexuality and put yourself forward and say, yes, I'm disabled and I'm a sexual person. So I think having the porn out there, I mean, it's so, you can't really ignore if you're seeing two people have sex.
Yeah.
You can't pretend that it doesn't go on anymore. So I guess it kind of gets past any stereotypes of asexualization.
Yeah. But and I think that can be a problem. I think sometimes disabled people come across as being obsessed with sex or so overtly sexual because they're having to prove that they have this sexuality.
Yeah.
Like I said, disabled people, not me, of course, but other people are obsessed with sex.
But I think you're saying it can come across that way, and I think, I mean, certainly we were just chatting even about experiences I've had this weekend, you know, going on dating apps and having, you know, swiping through, just like anybody else does. And, you know, I came across a profile of someone in a wheelchair, and the, you know, an average bio for Tinder or Bumble or any of those might be, I'm really into music and a terrible cheesy chat up line. But this man put, you know, I'm from Glasgow, and I'm disabled, but I can have sex pain-free. And, you know, like, it's just having to be so explicit because I guess he's kind of thinking two steps ahead of himself that maybe people are just going to reject me on that basis. So having to be so explicit about sex up front, people could think that you're overly keen or obsessed with sex, as you were saying. So I think the pornography normalizes sex and puts it out there.
Completely.
And I think also it's nice to see different types of bodies too, that are just, I mean, I personally don't find attractive in porn the big 6 foot macho guy and then the girl with the fake boobs, and I just don't find that attractive. So seeing a different spectrum out there, even if it's not of your own body, does, I guess, make you feel better? Or it's just, when everything's so in your face of a Hollywood standard, sometimes it's nice to look at something a bit more niche as well.
Yes, okay, I got a lot of win-to-win conversations with people around the same subject. One of the common themes with people saying they get bored looking at the same old people. And they asked me to bring something a bit different, a bit, you know, something other than the usual thing.
I mean, because it's like Barbie and Ken watching porn sometimes. It's so plastic and so over the top that, I don't know, I don't personally find that kind of mainstream attractive.
Yeah. There's a quote here that I didn't know the person I'm about to quote would be in the room, so that's a little bit awkward, but hey. So this idea that the only important elements in society are the artistic and the criminal, that they alone, by questioning values, can force it to change, with the great Samuel Guarini over there. So this idea that somehow in doing this work we can force people to change, we can force a bit of societal movement, is something that I'm very interesting. That's why I make all the work that I make here. It's about that change. So that, for me, focus got to offer society.
Yeah. And I guess when we're kind of reframing that quote, we're basically saying, well, can disabled porn, is it artistic and criminal for one, but can it also kind of force society's values to change? So I think definitely, I think in terms of looking at elements in society, porn is both artistic and criminal and has been for a while. And then I think as an extension to that, disabled porn is perhaps even more so. It is seen as more taboo. And I think when we were chatting before, it was almost like some people might say, like, I don't want to watch it, you know, in case I don't like it. But I think what's scarier for some people is, I don't want to watch it in case I do. What does that say about me? I think there's a stigma and even finding certain disabled people attractive, because I think there's sometimes a big smokescreen of abuse around and everything. Yeah. And I think we've spoke about before about identity, and we find identity in what we find attractive. So if I'm the macho gym guy, you know, with the mirror selfies, but actually I'm attracted to disabled women, you know, you're supposed to match the gym bunny blonde, but if you don't, then I think that kind of leaves you feeling a wee bit lost too, because we're told to like certain things in society. So I think by questioning your own values, watching it, what if I do get turned on? What does that say about me? So I think certainly porn has that element.
Well, the thing you were saying about when you start searching for porn, there's sort of things that come up. And oh God, we're going to skip a little bit. Oh no, we're going to get it. Oh, back up. Hold up.
Yeah, I mean, this was just even, I didn't search for anything other than the word disabled, and not even on a porn site, into Google. So amateur disabled porn searched for, and this is really what comes up. So your first video is Guy Fucks Disabled Down Syndrome Girlfriend. Next one, Uncle Forces Disabled Niece to Fuck. And that's not me searching for anything explicit. That's me literally just searching for disabled porn. And I think if I was someone who was perhaps curious and had an inkling and wanted to dip my toe in the water, and this is the first site that I come to, I'd be just so tempted to shut my laptop lid, because I think we live in such a society now that you're afraid of clicking on the wrong thing and being taken to the wrong place. And I think when it's grouped in, you know, just you're talking amateur disabled porn grouped in with topics like this, you might think, hang on, am I liking something that I shouldn't be? Because it's so grouped in with the incest videos, the granny porn. But I mean, when we boil down to the element, we're just talking about a disabled person featuring in a video that has sex. But it seems to be grouped in with this.
Completely. But there are positive representations out there.
Yeah, totally.
And things, increasingly, thinking will see individual people filming individual sex acts. It can't not from well with other people. We can come back to power later on.
Yeah, of
but
course.
There's something in there about power for me. And it is. Yeah, this one. There's not much audio here, so we can talk over it. But you look at me when you think this video.
Yes, so we were, I hadn't realised we were even talking about the same clip, because I was speaking of a video. I mean, it's one of those things that you start researching things and you just fall further and further down the rabbit hole. So I was watching certain videos and it's opened up a whole new world. I'm not sure if you've heard of para-pretending. Yeah, which I know for some people who might not watch the sale of porn, but it's about somebody who is able-bodied pretending to have a disability and making porn about it, because there's obviously, it's lucrative, there's money to be made in that. So when I watched this video, I watched a slightly longer clip where it appears like the woman at the end stands up and moves into another chair. But we were talking and we weren't sure whether that could be the transfer. But I just thought there certainly is power pretending porn out there, and I think that's a dark element to it as well. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, because obviously there are a lot of new people who will get up out of the wheelchair and move elsewhere. So it doesn't mean that, but it does open up so many questions about if you are pretending to be disabled and making money out of that porn, then, you know, the same issue happened for me that happened with Daniel Gate-Lewis.
Yeah.
You know, if you can make money out of pretending to be disabled, then, it feels a bit unfair.
But we spoke about this clip as quite a positive representation, because it is quite sexy. I don't know if it's just me that thinks that, but... And we were speaking about, well, why is it? Because you know, we'd sent each other clips back and forth, got banned from Facebook probably in the process. We were talking about this, and I said, you know what, I really like that one. And I was talking about, again, I don't know if it's my personal preference, but I was saying for that, I liked the power dynamics, I liked everything else. But we were talking about that could be because it's a solo clip. You know, she holds all the power and she controls how she portrays her body in that clip. Yeah. But of course, you can't say the way forward for the sale of pornography is only solo clips.
Yeah.
But I just think it was a good representation. And again, it's you are seeing what you're seeing on screen, but I think it shows somebody using their body in a way that they want it to be portrayed.
Yeah, we hope. So, yeah.
Yeah,
the thing you can't show utopia. We've spoken a lot about what are we aiming for here? What sort of change are we talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Will we get that by having more disabled people in porn?
Well, I think you can answer that really in two ways, yes or no. I think, would it lead to some sort of sexual utopia? Well, as we said before, it's like kind of claiming a sexuality and stepping forward and saying, yeah. I'm disabled, I like to have sex. And I think also it's about feeling, we spoke about before about representation in porn, and I can watch a video with two gay black men having sex and get turned on by it. Now I'm neither of those things. But we were talking about how important is identity in porn. You know, there's representation identity. You can certainly get off from watching a video that you're not represented in. So I guess we were talking about how important is representation in porn.
It means a lot of the conversation we had actually apply just as much to mainstream film and theatre as they do to porn. However, when I'm talking to people like the Arts Council, I don't tend to talk about the porn industry, which is probably not a bad thing. But yeah, so I guess we're the same discussion about how important it is to see yourself reflected in porn. How much the actor wants you to see your experience in porn. I think there's a bit of that, but also a bit of fantasy, a bit of...
Yeah, you know, and it's like you said before about the you know, videos with, say, 60-year-old men, overweight, sleeping with young, hot teens. And as you said, the 60-year-old man who's watching that is not necessarily looking at the other 60-year-old man when he's watching it, but it's about that kind of fantasy of almost stepping into it and thinking, yeah, so this hot young teen wants to have sex with me as well.
Clearly he doesn't, but yeah.
But yeah, we're just saying about, obviously, whether representation is important, but I think it depends on the type of porn out there. And again, not to just fully play on negatives, but we were talking about a difference between filmed sex and pornography, and whether we believe that there is a difference. Because I think mainstream porn has the ability almost to kind of boil everyone down to their base parts. I think that's great. I think it's an equalizer. And when I've been watching disabled porn, after a minute or two, if I'm into it and I'm enjoying it, I'm not looking at arms and legs. And I don't know if that's just me and I'm revealing too much. But I think that's a good equaliser. But I think at the same point, we're talking about, okay, so if porn's reducing everyone down to their base parts, is that still a sign of social progress?
The good thing about, yeah, the reason why individual disabled people might do porn versus the bigger political stuff. From what I've seen, a lot of disabled people are wanting to put their sexual self out there and to be seen as being sexual.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's politically advantageous or not, it's not really what they're thinking about.
No.
They don't really give a cost.
I know, and
it's about the personal gain that they get.
I think so, and I think, you know, if I am a feminist, but I want to be in porn where I'm tied up and called a slut, then I'm allowed to do that. And that's part of playing with gender, playing with sexuality, in the same way that there's power and there's pleasure in playing with disability, and also on a platform that you might have not had before. So I think if nobody else is held to that moral standard, then neither should disabled people either.
Yeah.
And I think we were talking about the kind of individual versus the social gains. I might feel quite liberated playing with disability and playing with certain aspects of myself, but am I negatively furthering the discourse? But then, as you said, is that even your worry to have?
Yeah.
So I think it's certainly interesting.
In my research for this work, which was extensive, very, very difficult, you understand, I went to view sex parties in places like Amsterdam and London. And the Amsterdam one especially was very interesting because it had a very different feel to it. It was about European vibes, as well as describe it as. Although I must tell you that the great experience for me was that when you're in a wheelchair and you're trying to get through a crowd, quite often you're trying to back people out of the way. Now that's fine when they've all got their clothes on, you just gotta do that. When you do that in a sex club, it's a whole different thing. You never know what you can come into contact with. But yeah, the club in Amsterdam was very interesting because there was a great equaliser.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I think there were about 5 visibly disabled people in there.
Mm-hmm.
You thought, okay, that's,
yeah, and I think
something happening here.
We've spoke about that before, almost when you get into the queer and the kink sex communities, it can be more open as well. And it's that kind of, we were talking about before, if you're in a club and you're flirting with someone, that can be interpreted in many different ways. But if you're in a sex club and somebody approaches you, you know, you're probably onto something there. So we were talking about how...
Probably.
No, not no. necessarily. So I was like, excuse me, do you know where the bathrooms are? So I think, like, it can remove the need to interpret intention as well.
Yeah.
But we were talking about if that's a good thing or not, and the chase involved.
Totally.
And sometimes it's about early into me, oh, they said this and they've done that. So certainly we're not saying that, you know, let's just everyone be direct about what they want and that's a utopia.
Yeah.
But it's one way to look at things, or at least having a sex positive space to go to.
The balance, that guy called Daniel James, he is a porn star from Toronto in Canada, who's got cerebral palsy, and seems to be making quite a racket out of it, which I'm quite angry about. So let's be sure that there are positive representations of disabled people in porn.
Mm-hmm.
He's very open about his impairment and about his experience, you think, okay. And when you look at his work, it's not really focusing on the impairment, but it's a part of it.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting as well. You know, if we're talking about disabled porn, I guess we could talk about, well, what would make good disabled porn, but that's so subjective. I guess we'll discuss a wee bit later on about which porn we find problematic. But for me, with Daniel James, just people enjoying each other and having fun, I don't think you can go much far wrong with that either.
Yeah. Phew. Oh. The thing is, getting a public conversation, whether that would make it more accessible to disabled people. We spoke at the start about how the decentralisation, the kind of let's avoid talking about sex and disability because it's all a bit icky, a bit complicated, just put it over there. If we make it a more open public conversation, would that help?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think so. I mean, it's obviously, I spoke about doing a project before on sex and disability and recruiting participants through that. There's not a lot of sex and disability organisations in Scotland that I could have just went straight to. So it was about being clever with that and approaching different disability organisations and asking, you know, do you have anyone who'd be interested in taking part? But really the reaction I got when I phoned maybe even employment organisations and so on was, well, no, we don't discuss that here, and practically the phone put down. And it's like, yeah, I know that's not your main aim, and I'm sure they weren't meaning any malice by it, but if they don't discuss that here, then they don't discuss that with the people that use their services either. And then it kind of, again, just perpetuates this myth that if you don't have any place to voice your sexual feelings, then, and you're not speaking about it, then I guess you don't have any, which is so backwards, obviously, but it's just about really finding just a key to the door of that. And, you know, sometimes for some disabled people, they might need an outside agency or a third person to help facilitate things. Yeah. But I guess then that agency can almost hold the key to the door of your sexuality, whether they want to listen, what kind of sex they'd be up for facilitating.
The whole gatekeeper thing can be a issue. A few years ago, I did a one-man show if these spasms could speak, but went round the world. But part of that, we tried to do some outreach in Scotland with disability organisations, and we invited this one in Stirlingshire, which is one of the big national charity around disability, and we said, you know, come and see the show, and then we can bring the show to you, breaking barriers, all of that stuff. So they came to the show, a couple of members of staff, and they afterwards, they said, oh yeah, it was very good, but you know, you got quite a lot of upset, and our people wouldn't really like that. And you're like, wow, you know? So they've got, I think, like about 120 disabled adults there, and clearly they've made that decision that they wouldn't like a couple of checks.
Yeah, and it's, you know, so you get past that barrier and you're finding someone who's willing to talk about sex or facilitate or even organise meetups. I think then if you're talking about the role of kind of PAs and caregivers, you're kind of restricted on your sexual spectrum, I think. Especially if the person who might be helping you facilitate could be your family as well. So it's about how comfortable do you feel in asking, you know, in asking for different types of sex. Like, I was thinking about how we kind of talk about a high level of sexual agency and how do we define that. And often it seems like in society it's our ability to have a private sex life and not have to ask for further assistance. But even if you manage, you find someone to talk to about it, how comfortable do you feel in asking, okay, can you help me facilitate where I want five guys to have sex with me and I want them to call me a slut or do this or do that? I can go out and seek that, I'm able to, but if I need to rely on someone else to do that, I might not feel comfortable in asking, or they might not feel comfortable in providing that for me. Again, because there's this whole kind of smokescreen of abuse being used.
Well, my partner and I have been advocating recently for PAs, and I thought it would be a great advert for a PA. You know, personal assistant wanted to find five guys to fuck. Yeah. Who's not going to sign up for that? So, yeah. We spoke about this idea of a passport, a sort of disabled passport. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was just kind of throwing ideas, seeing what'll stick. But we were talking about, you know, in regards to a sexual utopia, what would be helpful? And I thought, well, imagine if sex was like a passport, and you've got your whole passport, and you're trying to gather stamps. And I'm like, oh, today, yeah, I'm going to sleep with a blonde guy gonna sleep, you know, this girl, I'm gonna sleep with three people and do this. And you're gathering all these stamps. And I was saying, for me, that's about almost gathering experiences. And sometimes you don't know what you're into till you do it, and then you're obsessed with it. But I think that you were talking about, okay, that's all very well and good, but what's your pool still?
Yeah. Yeah, who's within your pool? I think that's the one of the cool questions you can come about. We've got a pool of people who we consider to be sexual beings, and the people not within that pool, quite rightly, you know, young people, children, quite rightly not in that pool, but quite often old people not in that pool either, but also disabled people are not in that pool. Yeah. And that's where the problem lies for me, is how do we widen your pool?
I think as well, I mean, I know we're kind of jumping back and forth, but I think it's all related. About, okay, you've widened your pool and so on. So again, I was at a club the other night and there was a man in a wheelchair and I was thinking to myself, I was like, how would I know if he was coming on to me? Like, how would I know? I mean, the usual signs when you're in a club could be that, you know, there's that, oh, they've half bumped into me. Does that mean anything? And then they do it again and you're like, oh, no, there's something going on here. And then maybe there could be a little bit of grinding, a little bit of a whisper in the ear. But at any point, I could turn around and say, I'm sorry, what are you doing? They could say, oh, I'm just dancing. Like, you know, like, and it's not that explicit. But actually, if the man in the club had found me attractive, probably would have had to tap in the shoulder, ask him to come down his level, chat away, and maybe be a bit more explicit about what he was saying. You know, I find you really attractive. Do you want to dance? Do you want to come home with me? And there's no playing that off as, I'm sorry, I just bumped into you. So I think, and again, relating back to the man on the dating app, it's not that you're super keen or that you're a very overly sexual person. It's just that you need to be more explicit in your actions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That the idea of the pool was interesting as well, because we all got the reports about the number of people who know disabled people. And like the figure is about 17% of people in the UK say they've got a disabled friend. So it's a very small number. So if you're not mixing with disabled people, then they're not going to be in your pool. You're just not going to see that as a possible.
I know. And like from speaking to people, you know, to go back to that question, equality is all well and good, but would you have sex with a disabled person? I think I've spoke to some people and said, no, I wouldn't. And I said, okay, well, why? And I said, I've just not, you know, found a sale person I'm attracted to yet. And I said, but you said no. You know, like, it's kind of like, for me, like, I would identify as bisexual. And for me, that's because I could kind of speak to a person on each level and be like, oh, am I attracted to them? And then kind of evaluate from then. But it's almost like it's okay to rule it out from the start, rather than just, well, I don't know if I was attracted to the person. So it is about how do we widen that pool and perhaps making sex more of a public conversation. If everybody's having to be a bit more explicit in what they're saying, then that, I guess, could lead to more sexual openness.
Yeah. We've spoken a lot about power and sex as well, which more and more feels like a really difficult area to talk about, given the amount of abuse of power around sex.
Especially now, yeah.
Especially now, yeah. But you said quite a lot of stuff that was interesting because you could see it as a cisgender woman, but yeah, I couldn't.
Yeah, the sex and power, and I think I was speaking to someone the other day and they said, yeah, that said, it would be great if there was no power involved in sex. And I was like, really? Would it? I don't know, that's part of the fun of it, is it not? Like, I know I can say that as a woman saying that, but sometimes it is about submitting to someone or being more dominant and taking turns to be the power. It's a constant interplay. It's not even that the person who is behaving more dominantly has the power during sex. If I have a fantasy where I want somebody to tie me up and call me names again and they are so into me that they want to submit to my fantasies, even though I am the submissive role during that sexual act, I could have the power with that. So it's do you really want to remove the power from sex? One, I just don't think it's viable. I don't think it's realistic. And two, I don't really know why you'd want to. I think it would kind of sanitize sex in a way.
Yeah. There was a guy in my research, a guy I met online, he was being explicit in saying that his attraction was guys who said poetry and guys who had a stutter or stammer. And it was a thing about, yeah, difficult gig. Mm-hmm. When you're that specific in what your attraction is, I wanted to go, okay, what's that about? But he went on to say that for him, he wanted to be dominated by a disabled guy. So there's all sorts of power dynamics in there that were really interesting to unpick and go, it's not,
I think it's, to pick up on that, it's always such a line when we're that specific about what we want. I mean, I don't think anybody would say to me if I said, oh, I'm just really attracted to guys with dark hair, that somebody would go, you can't do that. Yeah. Like, you know, like, but then how far can you really go with that without someone saying, okay, what are you picking up on here? Yeah. And we've talked a lot about devoteeism before as well. But then, I don't know, I don't think you can tell somebody what they can't be attracted in, I guess, as long as they're not using and abusing that. And we said that before, as long as you've found somebody, if you want to be tied up and called Susie, but you've got someone who wants to tie you up and call you Susie, then is that a reciprocal relationship? I don't know, it's tough.
But what we've now got is a society where most people can go out and say that. They can say, I want this, or I want to do this. Mm-hmm. And then they can find someone who wants to get to them. Mm-hmm. And my comment is, you know, for disabled people, that's still not quite there.
Yeah.
Still not quite able to go out and go, I want this.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Cool. Rich, here we go. Okay. Oh, my goodness. So, I'm always saying, well, what do we need to do about any of this? How do we move it forward? Whose attitudes do we need to change? Disabled or non-disabled people?
I think both. I think to kind of start off, whose attitudes do we need to change? I think to get the foot in the door in the first place, we were talking, it's kind of a chicken and egg relationship. We were talking about, okay, if you want more people to watch disabled porn, but if I send anyone in the direction of disabled porn and we've got that kind of screen cap that came up earlier, it probably is going to scare people off. So I think before we can convince people to watch disabled porn, we really do need to say better disabled porn out there. And to do that, you need to recruit more disabled performers. So I think, again, it's going back to what we're afraid to admit that we're attracted to. And if you're being grouped in with quite dark stuff, I can see your reluctance to come back. Or even you might be watching it in secret but not telling anyone about it. And if you're not telling anyone about it and you're not sharing that, then I don't think you're normalising the disabled porn either.
In the conversations that I had yesterday, probably it's not a representative sample, it's, you know, people coming to the sort of event, so they're arguably more open-minded. But when the question was, you know, can you think of a disabled person that you find sexually attractive? And everyone said yes, they could, which pleasantly surprised me.
Yeah.
And they could carry on then. So that was, you know, it felt like, yeah, there's maybe a bit of progress there.
But maybe that's about the success that you said before, 17% of people. I think a lot of things are exposure. It's like that, well, would you fuck a disabled person? No, well, why not? I just not met someone who I'm attracted to yet. But if, you don't know, there was just more exposure to all different types of people, then I think those attitudes would change. But then it's about, as we've said before, access to certain areas. That if I'm going to the nightclub to meet people, it needs to be accessible for everyone first.
Yeah. On the attitude issue, I'm going to play this while we're talking.
Yeah, so this is a clip that I found on a porn website, which is a disabled woman transferring from her bed to a chair. So I'll let you watch it, but she's not undressed, she's not naked, she's not saying anything, you know, particularly sexy or doing anything sexy. Yet this has thousands of views on a porn website. Comments, this is so sexy and so on. And you know, I don't know, that we've talked about, okay, well, what makes what would make good disabled porn? Well, for me, what makes porn is I see porn as a video of that contains some sort of sexual act in it. But then I guess if you're seeing this as a sexual act, and you know, I don't know, we've never really spoken this before, but if you've seen the videos on throwing one in there on porn.
I thought we'd come again. Everything.
No, we'll be here for hours. Okay. About the videos that are voyeur and they're shot without anybody's consent as well, about, you know, disabled women on trade and so on. And these are uploaded to porn sites. So there's that kind of dark element with things, that, like, what is it about this specific video that you find attractive if you're watching that? And if you want more disabled pornography, is this the kind of way we want to go? I don't think so, but what are your thoughts?
No, I don't know. It makes me deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But then take that, I make a lot of work where I invite people to watch me crawl around and get up on stage, get back on stage. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they're not wanking at the same time.
But it's dark
actually,
out
there. If you pay your ticket price, I don't care what you're doing.
But then I guess that's kind of saying, you know, if you pay your ticket price and stuff, and we were talking about before that somebody might have a fetish but never reveal that they have a fetish for something. So I could be having sex with someone and you're never really going to know what's going on in another person's mind, and if they're not saying to you that you're their fetish and they're doing it for these certain reasons, then are you being exploited? Well, I don't know, it's just tough. Like,
go, but you can see, if that woman asked for the videos and she uploaded it to that porn website, mm-hmm. and she knows the guys, people are working off of that,
mm-hmm.
great.
And also for her, it was about what we were going back to before. She might feel sexually liberated uploading that video, and getting attention, getting comments. Again, who am I to say that you're wrong to do that? Like, it's not, I don't think it's helping the discourse, but.
I would add as well,
yeah.
people sometimes are sexually attracted
to caught.
Mike.
I would. It was just a small thing, but I would add that that sometimes people are sexually attracted to things that, like, the rest of us wouldn't find sexual. Like, you have people who get turned on by, like,
houses and
balloons
stuff.
Or something, you know, different things that just we wouldn't even see as remotely sexual. So.
But then I guess, are you, if someone's attracted to balloons, that's an object. So are you objectifying somebody by being attracted to that one element of them?
I don't know. I didn't have more than that.
I think with a lot of talks like this, we're really asking more questions than we're finding answers. Yeah. But I think that's good to do, because I think it's almost forcing you to ask a question that you might have not thought about before. I know you've said with your work you like to show someone something and then they've seen it and they've got choice about then what they choose about it and think about it.
The main difference between your academia and my making teachers is you have to answer questions. I think I can ask. I can go, what do you think about this?
And then you're like,
and
then
yeah.
I think it's interesting, certainly.
Yeah. I think about whatever you can think of, someone will get
there's
off on that.
There's a form for it,
like a form for it. Yes. But there has to be a line, does it not? Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, it's like what I was saying about you've got these videos that she has fully consented to, that's what she wants to do and so on, but it piques people's interest, and then perhaps the same people who watch this are the same people who are secretly filming people on trains and getting off on that. That's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like.
But, for example, there's a lot of the secret filming that's not actually secret. Set up as,
and then you've got the power of pretenders, and you've got it's just a minefield type.
Totally. Right, you speak to the last bits and hopefully get to some questions.
Mm-hmm. So how much of the fear factor around sex and disability is about the mechanics? The kind of...
A lot of this came from your research, didn't it?
Yes, it did. I mean, there's been a lot of research done before, but about people saying, you know, chatting to somebody in a club, and then, you know, that the talk of, well, do you want to come home with me happens, and so on. And people saying, well, I don't know, how does that work? Like, you can't stand or run. And it's like, are you normally standing and running during sex? Like, I don't know how you're doing it, but I'm doing it differently. And it's that kind of thing, you said it, I think, best before, you know, if you can, if I can do 50 sexual positions and the next person can do 100, does that make them better at sex than me? I don't know, that's not how it works, is it? Like, I think it's more of a tool for communication, but then I guess seeing porn and seeing how it works, you can't really hide behind that mechanic anymore.
I guess that's, If you're being faced with someone having sex on your laptop, who's disabled, you have to go, okay, they can. Mm-hmm. And it feels weird for me that we're having to prove that we can.
I know,
Because, you know, my puppy can hump. So, you know, if you can do it, sure, anyone can do it. But I think we are still at that stage.
Yeah.
Or I also wonder, is that a smoke screen?
I think it is. I think it's easier, like, you said it before, but it's, we can think about disabled people in terms of care aspects, and it's, okay, but how do we care for that person, and how do we clothe them, look after them, find employment? And it's like all this reframing people in terms of service users and how many services they need. And actually, if we try to reframe sex as that, I think by looking at the mechanics and talking about all that, again, it kind of desexualizes sex for me in a way. Mm. And if we show the porn, we're like, right, okay, you can see it's been done. How do we face the stigma aspect of things? And I think even in terms of, I watched this this porn the other day about a woman who had an arm amputated and her boyfriend, and it was amateur porn, and it was, you know, very grainy quality. But it was, you know, she at one point took out lube, squeezed it onto her stump, and lubed herself up. Now, if we were watching mainstream porn, then there would have been a lot therefore happening from that. You know, there's a lot of stump porn out there, and but for her, that is how she practically done things. You know, she squeezes with one hand, she uses the other hand, and you kind of see how disability interacts with sex. So I think it's about even changing it. But I think the difference was that wasn't mainstream. There was no performance element to that. I think we've watched, again, some problematic clips where it seems like there was one we watched about a disabled man having sex with a porn star. And it was like she was just performing on top of him. Like, he might as well have been a sex toy the way that she was acting. She didn't look at him once. She was just looking straight into the camera. And again, I didn't find that sexy to watch because there was no connection with that. But that's maybe just my own personal preference. It's hard to say, isn't it?
Cool. Right, we're nearing the end. And we've been talking a lot about power, commission, desire. Fetishization is something that I've tried to avoid in quite a lot of my work because it's been done a lot before and doesn't interest me that much, you know. Mm-hmm. Yet some folk get off on it, that's not really where I go. But it's all part of this world. So one of the questions we came up against where it's part of the problem that non-disabled men specifically are scared of being seen as being abusive to a disabled woman.
Yeah, we spoke about that, just about the power play involved. And I think if you are seen like as having, I don't know, if you're seen almost in some respects, and I'm not trying to say this myself, but as having a submissive role in society, then I think people think, would I be taking advantage of you if I was to do this? Even if that's what you're fully consenting to as well. So I think there's been a lot of, it's like we find identity in what we find attractive. So again, we're going back to the macho gym type guy. If he was turning around and say, actually, I really find disabled women attractive, somebody might question that as well and think that it could be seen as abusive. So maybe they're avoiding for these elements. And it's again, it's about feeling like you're not maybe allowed to be attracted to something that you find attractive, that there's that barrier in the way as well.
Yeah. Well, for me, that becomes a catch-22 of disabled people being seen as submissive in society would be less of a problem if more people knew disabled people, because they wouldn't be making that presumption that they're not going to get to know them until they see them as being less submissive.
And maybe that's about part of being in porn, and I think if the porn as well that you see is not actually reflective, the stereotypes that is playing on, and there is a lot of porn, we haven't really got clips here of it, but about of people saying, you know, oh, I'm so weak and this and that. And if that's what you're seeing out there, then when you maybe go to have sex with a disabled person for the first time, you might expect the same characteristics, the same as there's a lot of problems with porn that features Asian women and being kind of pigeonholed into the submissive role, that you kind of feel like you can't branch out of what your stereotype of sexuality is.
Yes, completely. Wouldn't it end with a positive quip to, you know, go out in a high? This is my series called Crash Pad. This performer is called Lyric Seal, and she's based in San Francisco, of course, because everyone's based in San Francisco. And I'll play this quick clip, and then we'll wrap it up. I love the fact that queer porn ends with someone talking to camera, but it is you, it's you copying, and good positive vibes.
Yeah, and I think it shows as well what porn, what sex means for really anyone. It's just about wanting to have the same experiences. And I know we've spoke about, to kind of end on a positive note, that we can focus on difference, but it's actually more interesting what makes us similar about, like, experience of wanting to be desired and of rejection and of love and just feeling turned on. Like, yeah. That's everything that we have in common, I think. Cool. So it's nice to play with that and play with your sexuality in a fun way, and porn offers that.
Totally. So, what we're doing here is by no means asking for anything. It's a sort of rambly what we've been talking about. Okay, end up, are there any questions or comments or thoughts or anything that you want to... Okay, that was okay.
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, we've got time for just a couple of questions.
Yeah, right.
I just thought it might be worth teasing out a little bit, differentiating between different disabilities and looking at, yeah, at how these issues play out across different disabilities.
Completely.
Because some of the issues play out differently, yeah, for cognitive disabilities, mm-hmm, developmental
Completely.
Disorders, physical disabilities. And I was... And I think people have different levels of discomfort. Like, you might find somebody who's like totally at ease with amputee porn, mm-hmm, but when it comes to like working with people with learning disabilities,
yeah,
and considering that they might want a sex life as well, they start, mm-hmm, freaking out, and then what you call the smoke screen of abuse comes more into play.
Think definitely.
So yeah, I just wondered if that was worth teasing out.
I'm thinking at the start that obviously we're talking a lot of visible disability, mm-hmm, because it's like a visible medium in a way that yeah.
And I think when we're talking about stigma, there's, you know, if I'm walking down the street and I'm like, is that person attractive? Often there are invisible cognitive disabilities, so it might not be the stigma attached to it as much obviously from the start. But I think you're right. I think you start getting on to slightly more territory that's tiptoeing around when you're talking about cognitive impairments. But people have cognitive impairments still have sexual desires, and not only sexual desires, but desires of intimacy, warmth, feeling attractive, the whole, again, spectrum of what we're afforded. But there's probably no easy answer, but it's definitely something that where I would like to explore more, and explore also the differences between, as you said, people's levels of uncomfortability.
And then I've got a part where they overlap, because I think a lot of the discomfort around physical impairment in porn is the perception that there's also a cognitive impairment going with that. So the overlap and the separate different kinds is a hard one to answer.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I find from talking with people with various forms of cognitive disabilities or developmental disorders about it, about sex and porn, when I know that area a bit more than I do around physical disabilities, is that it also tends to like expand and explode what sex is.
Mm-hmm.
And like chronic fatigue porn is very different from autism porn, you know, like those, but they also create some really different sorts of sex that everyone can benefit.
And again, as much as we talk about para-pretending porn, there is porn in which there are people pretending to have different cognitive impairments too. And then again, we're picking up on, is that allowed? Is that okay? Is that, it's just, it is a total, as you said, it just explodes. And the conversations, I think, become perhaps even more complicated, I'd say.
Well, I think that's the English, what mainstream society could learn from individual impairments and how they engage with sex. I can just picture a website where we can they get up the impairments and have a great catalogue of, you know, autism porn and what you could learn from
that. It tends to involve a lot of weird fabrics.
Fabulous. Great. Anything else? Any other questions, comments, but why not?
It is just a microphone. I don't like to be negative, but something that I don't think you've addressed, and I think you should, is that porn is fantasy. And 100 years ago, disabled people were seen as objects to be, you know, they weren't seen as normal people. And porn isn't normal, inverted commas.
Yeah.
And isn't showing disabled people as part of porn actually a negative stereotype, not a positive one, and just saying that, I'm not saying that it isn't consensual, but that they're just being there to be looked at, rather than, you're not having a relationship with this person you're watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So isn't it actually going to hinder rather than help people in society?
Yeah. I think we've spoke about that as well, and just like just between conversations with ourselves, that if the type of porn out there, as a lot of disability porn does, focus on the disability itself, it's actually overemphasizing maybe the role that disability plays in sex. But we've also talked about, if you were to make disabled porn, porn is a fantasy. You know, like when you're watching mainstream kind of hetero porn, they're not really stopping to put on a condom and all these things. Like that's kind of cut out of that. The fantasy element kind of overrides that. So when we talked about, okay, if you were gonna make disabled porn from scratch, are you showing a third person helping? Are you showing hoist? Is that taking away the kind of fantasy alluring part of it? Or are you being realistic and showing the whole spectrum? And again, there's not an easy answer to that. That's why we were talking maybe about amateur porn before and seeing how that interacts, that maybe if you've got the whole camera rolling from the start and it's maybe somebody who's already in a relationship or not, or just friends, like, but maybe more porn will enjoy himself, but there's, it's complicated.
I think the thing is, porn can be about fantasy, but I think also it can be not. It can be about reality. And the thing we said earlier about film sex versus porn, because sometimes porn can be set up quite fake. Film sex tends not to be. So disabled people are more part of that than just about seeing that people are out there having sex with disabled. So I think, I can see both sides, but I think that,
Sometimes you're maybe watching something and it's realistic, not realistic, but that is not always the decider for me of whether I find it sexy. Yeah. There's sometimes just an element and you can't even put your finger on why. I think often you're getting turned on, it's a natural reaction, and you're not often in charge of what you're, you know, you want to choose attractive or what gets you turned on. So you can, and I think a wider spectrum of porn would help, but that would include realistic or all types of people. And I think I get what you mean in that porn is also a machine that can really just reduce people down to the base parts. And are we saying that that's a really positive element and that we should run forth with that? Not necessarily, but I think I spoke to someone about it earlier and they said it's kind of like equal opportunities oppression. And like, yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but yeah. I guess we should all be afforded the same rights to express our sexual agency.
Yeah. Cool. Great.
That's been a really great conversation. I'm the anonymous person on the floor. Hopefully we can sort of invite you to continue the conversation, hopefully kind of outside in the foyer as we turn around for the next performance, which is going to start at 3:30. But wow. Hopefully to join me in thanking Maxine and Robert for a really, really great presentation.
Thank you.
Really good conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks.